Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
Spectrum Business knows small business owners have to do it all. Get Spectrum One for Business. Just $49.99 a month for internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for a year. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus chews.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast. Back for another week and back at full complement. And firstly, my name is Jack Collins.
Hey.
I'm back.
Hey.
And I just want to say well done to you two. It's Sam Tide, Dean Jones. It was a really, really brilliant episode last week. I really enjoyed it. I was lying on a beach in Rhodes having a brilliant time. And then I got to listen to this absolute stunner of an episode. I've been a little bit taken aback by the amount of people being like, can you just keep it as you two? But, you know, we take the rough with the smooth. It was really brilliant. Well done. Very
we are
work.
Actually launching our own podcast, the Dean and Sam Show. It will be coming next week.
Oh, dear.
The greatest Sam and Dean
combo
Supernatural reached its 8th season on television.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, very
well, did
pleased.
You have a good time, Jack? That's what we needed you to do. We needed you to go and rest because you now obviously don't get a break for another 3 years.
Yeah, I'm rested. I had 8 days of doing absolutely nothing, and I'm raring to go. By the end, you could see I was starting to write threads on Twitter about players that, you know, people were interested in signing.
What I want to know is, obviously, you were all-inclusive, and I did ask you to do a TikTok because I've seen the trend of people like, what my boyfriend drinks in an all-inclusive. What was your capacity day?
It wasn't too heavy. I genuinely had a rest. I think this is the key element of life. I genuinely had a rest.
You didn't hit the free bar nonstop.
Well, the free bar stopped at 11 p.m. See, which
opens at 11 a.m. That's 12 hours of drinking.
But it was probably for the best, right? Because at 11 p.m., you know, the bar itself was open for 2 hours, but you had to pay for stuff after that. And I was like, nah, not going to do that. I'll pay for the all-inclusive. So actually, it stopped you going absolutely mad, which is probably for the best.
Nice.
But yeah, I feel rested, recovered, and raring to go on this summer. So
yeah, well, that's my turn next, isn't it? So this is our last show all together. I go away next. So Sam went, you go, and then I'm going. So nice to see each other occasionally.
Yeah, we do just occasionally get all three of us back at capacity, but it's rare. Right, shall we start with things we love? And Dean, I'm sure you're beset with stories about things that you're loving at the moment in the transfer world.
Yeah, I mean, like, totally immersed in the transfer world at the moment, like immersed in all the rumours and the deals that are done and everything else. But this is the thing that I love right now. Erling Haaland obviously has signed for Man City officially. But the thing I love about it is during his Man City medical, he discovered he's still growing. Erling Haaland is still growing. I watched his arrival video on the Man City website, which, by the way, I highly recommend. It's really interesting to see what goes on in the build up to actually like being announced as a player officially. What it actually shows is that life as a player is a bit boring in a way because you're just being carted around, doing what you're told, hanging around, it looks like, with a lot of people you don't really want to chat to a lot. But also it shows like how important you are made to feel like you are just like this celeb, basically, who is just like going to be shown what you're doing next and you're just protected at all costs. But yeah, look, he arrives, he goes to Barcelona first, has that part of his medical, then he jumps back on a private jet, goes into Manchester, taken into this health facility to get basically get his vital stats. So they're doing these tests on him and he's standing there in his underwear and the doc's measuring him to see how tall he is. No one really thinks much of it. He stands up against the thing, they put the thing bar down on his head and Haaland like goes to walk off back to the bed thing so they can lay down and do the next part of the test. And Haaland goes, how tall am I? And the doctor goes, 195.2 centimeters. He goes, oh my God, I've grown. Almost 1 centimeter. And he lays down, he's like laughing. He's like, I'm still growing. So Erling Haaland discovered in his Man City medical that he's now almost 6'5". And that's scary. That's really scary that Erling Haaland's still growing. He's 21. I mean, some people do keep growing. I mean,
you aren't meant to stop at 21.
You're supposed to stop now, but he is still 21. So he's got a little bit of time left. Maybe this is it. But like, it was just so funny. The fact he was like, oh my God. He was like genuinely like, I can't believe this. I'm still going.
I didn't think humans could get even bigger than Erling Haaland, but apparently they can continue to grow.
It's so funny when you watch this video and you see him like, when he gets out of the private jet or like, out of the car that's driving him around, like he's like so big that he's like got it takes him like a real few strides.
It's like he has to unfold himself.
He literally does. It's like he has to bring his limbs all back to life because they've all been like screwed up. It's so funny.
I think the best thing for me was the announcement video, which was just absolutely exceptional. I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a picture of Erling Haaland as he must be a 7-8-year-old in the Thompson Cook Man City shirt, a real old school vibe. And in the announcement video, they hold the picture up to the camera and they take it away and he's behind it in the new shirt. And I just thought it was done perfectly. There was no, it wasn't over high. Obviously the transfer has been done, if you will, for a while, right? We knew this when they announced that he was going to sign. So it was a matter of kind of when, not if. But for them to do it in that kind of nice understated way, throw him back to his roots, throw him back to the fact that, you know, he was obviously someone supported City growing up. I think Leeds as well. Let's not pretend it was just City, but his dad played for both. I think he was playing for Leeds when Erling Haaland was born, but the transfer to Man City had already been agreed. So it does feel like a real moment, you know, a City fan coming back, and he seems to be absolutely loving it. And I just thought the announcement video was brilliant.
By the way, he's still in great form. He played at the weekend. Norway had a big game against Sweden, and Haaland, they won 3-2, and Haaland scored two and made the other with an unbelievable assist too. Like, this guy is having the time of his life.
Yeah. I think this is it. He's just enjoying himself, and that's great. It's nice to see a player enjoying themselves at this point. We're going to talk more about Haaland later, though. So I'm going to move us on, and I'm going to take us away from transfers to talk about my thing I love. And I don't know how many people watched on Monday night the playoff between Peru and Australia. Now, Sam, I know you were supporting Peru. I know you were pretty gutted about the fact that they won't be at the World Cup.
Yeah, that's so much fun, man.
They are loads of fun, but there was a moment in this game, and I didn't have a horse in this race. I didn't hugely mind who won. I thought the Peruvian fans were absolutely exceptional. But then Andrew Redmayne came into the picture, right? So on the 120th minute, Graham Arnold, the Australian manager, subbed off his captain and goalkeeper, Matty Ryan, who's somebody you know from his time in the Premier League with Brighton and Arsenal. And they brought on Andrew Redmayne, who plays for Sydney. And Andrew Redmayne is a bald man. I think he's in his late 30s with a big red fiery beard. And he was brought on as the penalty specialist. Now, I believe that he has won leagues for Sydney with his penalty heroics before. So that makes perfect sense. What I wasn't expecting was Andrew Redmayne to then become, you know, one of the, you know, those kind of floaty things that people put up outside fan parks at World Cups with the big arms and legs.
Inflatable tube man.
Yeah, inflatable tube man. That's basically what Andrew Redmayne was on the line. He danced from one post to the other to the point of like ridiculousness, to the point where if this had gone wrong, we'd be talking about him in Melon of the Week, not Things We Love. But it didn't go wrong. It went right. And he managed to put off Luis Advíncula, who hit the post with his penalty, and then saved the fifth penalty in the only penalty where he managed to set himself before the penalty was taken. It was absolutely chaotic, unbelievable. I haven't seen anything really like it. It was like, you know, the Jersey Dudek thing, times it by about 15. It was nuts. Like, he was absolutely dancing from post to post, waving his arms everywhere, kicking his legs in the air. But I have read also today that he didn't just do these things. He actually apparently also saw the fact that the Peru goalkeeper had written penalty instructions on his water bottle. So as soon as he saw that, he took the water bottle and lobbed it into the crowd.
So you get like a yellow card or something for that. That's rude.
It was a bit rude, but it's also just like, it's pure shithousery in the finest form. And you know, you've got to rate it. You've got to rate it. It just was absolutely incredible. And he's gone and become a national hero from a man who'd only played 2 games, I believe, for Australia before this. Right at the end of his career, he has gone and become a national icon. And I love watching things happen in that regard.
He's going to make some serious
money. Some real big pee. And you know what? I got to respect it. I respect it. It was something quite spectacular. So shouts out Andrew Redmayne, Things I Love this week. But I am sad for the Peru fans who were phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, just to add on to the end here, that was his third cap. He is 33, so late 30s might be a bit harsh on him, but I've just looked him up on Wikipedia just to check those stats while you were talking, and according to Wikipedia, he's also Peru's dad, so add that to the list of achievements as well. Wow. Very good for him.
Yeah, wow, what an achievement. Achievement. Right, Sam, I did get a tweet actually from Yusuf who said it was a dramatic performance that Eddie Redmayne would have been proud of, never mind Andrew Redmayne, which I enjoyed quite a lot. So shout out Yusuf. Right, Sam, what's your thing you love?
The thing I love this week is Andrea Pirlo taking his next managerial job. Have you seen where he's landed?
Yes.
I have.
Turkish club Fatih Karagümrük. So
talk about landing loads of money.
I mean, so left field. he spent a year out of work post-Juventus and he returns to a one-year contract with Fatih Karagümrük in the Turkish Super League. I mean, his stock must be so low. But what I am loving is the fact that he's actually going out and trying to do something about it. You see a lot of managers, particularly managers who had illustrious playing careers, step into the managerial game, it not really go that well for them. And they just kind of fade out really quickly or just kind of give up or unwilling to drop down a little bit further to manage further down. And Andrea Pirlo is attempting to do something about the fact that his stock isn't particularly high. And I do also think that this move may be more specifically picked than we give it credit for on surface value, because Fatih Karagümrük, despite playing in Turkey, have an abnormally large Italian feel and contingent in their squad. Their goalkeeper is Emiliano Viviano.
Can we talk about that? Because do you know what squad number he wears?
No.
He wears 2. Because he's not their number one.
I mean, I think he wears the number one nowadays. But
I'm pretty sure Kieran Westwood did this at Sheffield Wednesday, for a little while as well. Really uncomfortable. Didn't like it at all.
Yeah, don't like that. Viviano's in goal. Lucas Bilia, formerly of Lazio and AC Milan, holding midfield. Fabio Barini scampering around up front. And last year they had Davide Biraschi as well on loan from Genoa, who I think they were quite
happy with.
And
Emre Moore, I think. Isn't Ahmed Musa there as well? This is actually quite a fun squad.
It's ridiculous. I think there's there's a Mame Biran Diouf hanging around somewhere as well. Like it's
Dean, one for Dean. There's a Kerem Fry. Yeah. That's a name you haven't heard in a long, long time. There's a Kerim Fry kicking around.
What a legend.
The Turkish league is absolute carnage for squad lists. You could entertain yourself all day. Is literally that tweet. Dudes can just sit around all day naming random players in Turkish squads and have the best time. But to finish off about this club, Fatih Karagümrük, in 2012, they were playing in the amateur regional leagues of Turkey. And in the space of 10 years, have achieved four promotions, skipped up to the Super League. And last year, they finished eighth. Now, Turkish football is kind of, it's in a tough spot. The big guns like Galatasaray are facing mountainous debts that they can't repay. And they finished 13th last season. They're in a terrible time. So some little clever clogs, some upshots, you know, some aspirational sides like Fatih Karagümrük can sort of step into that breach and have a really nice time for a couple of years and maybe give themselves a little go at something approaching European football if they can scrabble it together. And hey, maybe Andrea Pirlo is the next piece in line with that. But I thought this was a really interesting deal. And I've basically spent the last 2 years like just criticizing Pirlo because I thought he was terrible for Juventus. But I rate the fact that he's gone to a mid-table Turkish club and going, no, I am a good manager. I'm going to prove it. And I will drop down the level to prove that to people.
Yeah, why 1 year though? I don't understand the 1 year thing.
Like, well, maybe it turns out he is good and he doesn't want to be locked in for too long.
Mm. Or maybe he doesn't like it and he wants to come home, which is fair enough.
Doesn't sound like he's committed to the cause to me, but okay.
Yeah, but I mean, look, if they're doing well at Christmas, maybe he'll sign an extension. But we'll see. We'll see how we go.
I'm skeptical.
Yeah, you are. You only tie yourself down to long-term deals these days. Right, just before we move on to our main rankings, I just want to give a shout out to one of our listeners and one of our patrons, Cody, who is getting married at the weekend. Now, I wouldn't do this, you know, normally, but Cody actually invited us to his wedding. We can't go because it's halfway across the world.
If we could, we would.
We would be there in Houston, Texas, if we were available. Well, if we were able to get over there, if we were rich, capable of making it. But I just wanted to give a massive shout out to Cody for his lovely invite, a wonderful letter, and wish you all the best of luck, Cody, with your marriage to Shelby this weekend.
So, yeah, good luck, mate.
Congratulations and the best of luck. We were really touched by that invite, so thank you so much. And with that, we're going to take a quick break, and afterwards it's time for our main ranking. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for our main ranking, and we are going to be talking some more transfers today. So Sam, what's the basis?
Okay, so there's been quite a lot of big money deals already sealed. The transfer window has only technically been open like a handful of days, but clubs have been pretty busy already. So we're going to take a look at some of these deals because we actually haven't talked about them that much recently. I'm going to take the five most expensive transfers that have already been sealed or are right on the cusp of being sealed. We're recording on Tuesday. Well, I wait to see what Liverpool do and how swiftly they act on their new Uruguayan signing, but we'll include him as well.
He's taking pictures outside Anfield in a Liverpool shirt currently, like as in with just random people in the street. So I'm just going to just go for it that this is pretty much done.
Okay, in that case, yeah, he's definitely in. And we'll talk about the five most expensive deals and we're going to grade them. We're going to look at some early grades. We're going to decide how we feel about this business. And I'll certainly be providing a grade. And I will also courteously invite Jack and Dean to offer up their grades as well, if they so wish. But there's no pressure. We'll start at number five, and we basically had to make a choice between Diego Carlos to Aston Villa or Brendan Aaronson to Leeds United, because the fees are very similar. We've spoken a fair bit about Diego Carlos on our Patreon, and we've done a TikTok video on it, so please join us over there if you want some Carlos content. We will talk about Brendan Aaronson here. RB Salzburg to Leeds United. And this one feels like a pretty pivotal signing for Jesse Marsh in particular, because if he wants to run his 4-2-2-2 formation, he needs players like Brendan Aaronson, players who are fully comfortable receiving the ball in the center of the pitch and operating in that central column of the pitch. Because all of the Leeds midfielders and attacking players that he inherited were bought for Bielsa, who plays with extreme width. So you've got Rafinha, you've got Dan James, you've got Jack Harrison, who all either start wide and stay wide, or in Rafinha's case, start wide and receive on the touchline and then skip across the pitch. and cut inside and invite tackles and beat people and then use his passing ability as well. So Jesse Marsh tried to run a 4-2-2-2 with basically no players that could play in that attacking midfield band. So he's going out and he's addressing that right now. And Leeds have got a lot of problems to figure out this summer, but this is one of the most important ones. So I guess the good thing is that Aaronson has clearly already thrived under Jesse Marsh. Like, he knows him really well. He played for him at Salzburg. He's a seriously industrious presser of the football. He makes really good late arriving runs into the box, which is always a good trait for a number 10. And when he's counter-attacking into space, when the game's in transition, and when he's carrying the ball, he's a massive threat. So Aaronson loves it when a game breaks down and becomes stretched. But there are some negatives here. I don't think he's hugely creative. He is a press, run, shoot number 10. He is a Red Bull midfielder. And that's fine if the trade-off for creativity is that you score lots of goals and you make good decisions in the final third and you lead the press. He leads the press. I'm not so sure about the decision-making. And he doesn't score enough goals, considering he doesn't create that much either. I mean, he's never come close to double figures. And that's playing for a truly dominant team in a weaker league. He got 5 and 4 and 5 for Red Bull Salzburg and in the Austrian Bundesliga. And you take a look at his shot. I mean, he got 4 goals last season. One was a penalty of 52 shots. I looked at his shot map, thanks to the 23 toolbox, at least 20 shots from 23 yards or further out. I went and looked at the video. Yeah, they've all been blocked. He's not sussing out good shooting opportunities and in being quite shot happy and trigger happy. He's also missing like really good passes down the side to someone like Rasmus Christensen. So I'm a bit conflicted on this one, guys, because I think he's going to be really important in terms of tactical understanding for Jesse Marsh. And he does fit the system. But the trade-off between creativity and goals, it's not enough on the latter side to really justify the fact that he doesn't create that much. And of course, when you sign a player for a manager and then you move on from the manager later on, where does that leave you? So I'm kicking us off on a bit of a bum note, I'm afraid, because I have concerns about Brendan Aaronson to Leeds for £25 million.
Yeah. And it's not only that, it's like, who's going to be around him next season too? Rafinha almost certain to be gone. He's open to literally everything at the moment, to be honest with you, from what I'm hearing. They haven't got that striker yet, like Bamford. Well, he won't be fit by the start of the season. Who knows? With Patrick Bamford, should be fit, but you never know. They still need to sign another striker. Calvin Phillips probably going to be gone. Sounds like they're signing Mark Rocker. Is it? Is that how you pronounce his name?
From quite like that one. I'll be honest. I like that.
I also have concerns over Mark Rocker, but I think he gives Leeds a lot of what they need again. But I'd be worried that he's a bit lightweight for the Premier League, to be honest with you.
This is it, isn't it? It's this evolution that Jesse Marsh has to undergo. Like, there's no doubt he has to transform this team from what they were under Bielsa and how far they came, because they were falling short of where they needed to be in the next phase of building. But there are so many pieces that need to be added, as well as Aaronson. Like, I think he was obviously important to Marsh, and he made that clear, like, when he came in, that he still wanted him to come in, and that he was on Leeds' radar anyway. But there are 4 or 5 other players that need to come into that team as significant impact players on the side.
I would add one thing, Sam, in that I think Brendan Aaronson is kind of the long-term replacement for Matthias Klick, right? That's why he strikes me as the player that will fit into Klick's role in this system. Now, Matthias Klick has... No, but I just think he, you know, what Klick offered in that midfield, especially to Leeds, I think that's where he will... I think that's kind of what his... That's where the player switch is coming. That's where I think it's going to happen. Klick's played further up as well for Marsh. And I think, you know, you look at what Klick's record is in a dominant Leeds team in the Championship. Yes, he got 10, but he got 10 goals in 50 games in all competitions. He got 7 in 47 the year after. They're the two in the Championship. In the Premier League, he's got 4 in 36 and 1 in 37. You know, these goal records aren't great either. And I think that's the role that Aaronson has been brought in to play, you know, a player who leaves that press, as you say, who is able to bring that physicality and that kind of drive in midfield that Leeds feel like they've been lacking, to be perfectly honest with you. And I wonder if that's why that isn't so much of a problem, because, you know, Klick scored 22 goals in 179 appearances for Leeds. It's not like he's
you know, nailed this. It's just one of those things where you're looking at it and thinking, okay, you know, it's all a bit different. I just have a funny feeling that's where he fits in to this side.
But he's going to play as one of the two tens, and he's basically going to play as a support striker, and he's going to be making runs into the box. He's going to be taking lots of shots. He works
at Click.
Click has way more often than not operated from deeper than a number 10 spot as a second forward, way more often. And this is what they're bringing in Aaronson to basically provide that. And he hasn't done it to a prolific level in like the eighth best league in Europe in an overwhelmingly dominant side in which he gets given 52 opportunities to do it. So it's like, not only is it like a massive step up to come and just play in the Premier, like a huge step up in level to play in the Premier League, but he also then has to up his own production levels in line with the fact that he has to get up to speed with a much, much better level of opposition. It's a lot to ask. I'm not going to lie. I like facets of this deal, but like, it's a lot to ask Brendan Aaronson.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with all that. I think it is a step up. I think that, you know, obviously, you say he has a 4-2-2-2. There are three other players there who are going to be asked to do different things and create things. I think one of these number 10s will drop deeper and pick up and drive from deeper. And I think that will be Aaronson, but we'll see.
We'll have to see. I mean, look, I'm going to give it a C+ as a grade. Like, obviously, he's 21 and he can continue to improve, and he has a coach that massively trusts him, which is a great starting point. But there's quite a lot of peril in this deal, I think. And if it was like 10 million, I'd be like, oh, whatever, just give it a go. But it's 20, 25 million.
Yeah, it's
like,
a lot. It's a lot of money. It's a big
gamble. Fair whack. I'll give it a C+. But we can move into nicer waters at number four here. Karim Adeyemi to Borussia Dortmund, another RB Salzburg sale. This one's about 30 million euros with 3 million in bonuses. Announced a few hours after Erling Haaland was initially announced for City. Dortmund didn't do too badly out of the last Salzburg striker they signed. So, hey, why not go and fish in the same pond? But to be clear, everybody, Adeyemi and Haaland are so, so different. I mean, they're both prolific forwards, but that's about as far as the comparison goes. Adeyemi is a wide forward. He's played up front this season a lot in a striking two. He's constantly peeling out to the touchline, receiving the ball, and then working his way back inside. He doesn't go in to out. He goes out to in. He's not a focal point, and he will not spearhead your formation. So Dortmund are probably still going to be looking at other solutions there up front. I don't know if it's a new signing. I don't know if it's Daniel Marlin. Like, I don't know what it's going to be, but I expect Adeyemi to be playing from a wide position because that's what makes sense. From the wide position, he will run over the top constantly. And this is an incredible weapon. And I can't wait for you all to see it much more regularly because he is absurdly fast. Like, it's ridiculous. He's like Mbappe level quickness. He's Fonzie Davies fast. He is so quick. And he has this immense balance, which means he can run 30, 40, 50 yards at what must be like 25 miles an hour at certain points. And he keeps his balance and he can stop on a sixpence and change direction. And he's in perfect control of his legs and the ball, and he sends defenders flying. It's so much fun, guys. It's so much fun. It really is great to watch. And the quick feet, the change of direction, he's comfortable finishing off both feet. His conversion rate is good. He overperformed his XG to a pretty healthy degree last season, which means he's clearly a good finisher. He's beating the model, but not by an unsustainable amount. And we can revisit that concept a little bit later. He also sneaky creative, you know, fifth highest expected assists tally in the Austrian Bundesliga last season. So not just a roadrunner and not just a goal hoover. He's also quite creative as well in terms of the quality of the chances that he makes. And again, same argument as Aaronson. He is 20. He is going to get better and better. And he's going from Austrian Bundesliga to German Bundesliga, where the style of play is pretty similar. This is a lovely step and this is a lovely player. I'd give it an A-.
No, it's a nice one. I like it a lot as well. It's one of those, though, that you do wonder what Marco Rosa is thinking. He's like, hang on, I really wanted to play, to play with. I wanted to let that go. But alas, it kind of is what it is. But, you know, Edin Terzic has got a big job on his hands now to work out what this Dortmund side looks like and how, you know, they build on what was probably an ultimately disappointing season last year, I think. You know, not necessarily in terms of their league form, but I definitely think in the rest of the competitions they were in, they would have looked at those as massive opportunities missed. And so
it's going to be really intriguing to see how Adeyemi fits into this new look Dortmund and what Terzic does, you know, system-wise and formation-wise, in order to kind of get all these pieces into the right places so that they all work. And yeah, that's the only kind of concern I have. I kind of agree with you that I think Adeyemi probably should play from a wide spot to begin with, in order to try and get the best out of him and try and get him running at people, which is what he's best at. But I do wonder how they're going to look and how they're going to line up on that first day of the Bundesliga season.
Yeah, I mean, don't know, but at the very least for Dortmund, you know, they might have these question marks up front, but they've signed a new central defensive pairing, which will just give them so many more lives, I guess, is probably the way I would put it. You know, last season, with the amount of mistakes creeping into their play, especially at the back, last couple of seasons really, but last season they were hit really hard by it. If you are that leaky and that mistake prone at the other end, it means that you have to be perfect in front of goal, and no team can be perfect in front of goal every single week, and your off days become seriously punished. But if you go ahead and sign Nico Schlotterbeck and Niklas Süle as a new pairing, you stand a much better chance of keeping the sheet clean and allowing your forwards to kind of figure it out just once. And that can be enough for 3 points. So Dortmund have at least got that base to build from.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, in terms of fees, what are we talking here? Is it a sensible fee?
I think it's okay. 30 million euros and three in bonuses.
It feels like a lot. I know that Adeyemi's excellent, and yeah, I'm not saying that it will look like a lot in a little while, but there's still an element of how raw he is, and you know, and how that develops and how that moves. Now, I think it will probably be okay, but it's quite a big fee, considering when you compare it to other moves from Salzburg to Dortmund.
Yes, maybe. I think it's probably representative of the level of talent we're talking about here, though. Like, this kid's awesome. He's going to be amazing, so I think that kind of determines that, and we can't really compare it to any of Erling Haaland's moves because they're all release clauses, aren't they?
Mm. Yes, they are.
So yeah, there you go. Anyway, A- for Karim Adeyemi, and we will move on to Erling Haaland, who has apparently cost Dean, you may correct me on this, £51 million, but City fans hate the fact that people keep doing this, but we literally have to. And I know that agency fees and representation fees are part of every transfer deal, but the sheer size of these agency fees that we're talking for Erling Haaland moves the needle on exactly how much this transfer costs. I've seen reports, Dean, of like 40 million at times added on top of the 51, which...
Even still is a bargain.
Yeah, who cares?
So, I mean, who cares? But this player did not cost £51 million. Not close to it. He cost way closer to £100 million. I'd say that makes him not a bargain, by the way, Jack. I still think it's a good deal, but it moves him out. It's not a bargain.
But I do think it's unfair to do this with some deals and not with others. Now, I agree with you that this is more than anyone else is probably paying in agent fees because of the nature of it, right? Yeah. I completely agree. But I mean, how much are the agency fees on these other transfers that we discussed? I bet you they're not insignificant numbers.
No, but I don't think they're doubling the cost of the transfer, which already costs £51 million. I think these are genuinely extenuating circumstances, and it has to be mentioned.
It has to be mentioned 100%. But I think if we start to throw these things around, I've seen people trying to put... So, you know, I completely understand why City fans get upset about this. And I agree with you that I think in this circumstance, it needs to be discussed because it exists within this realm. And I completely get that. But my kind of take would be that I've seen people trying to put his wages into the transfer fee.
Well, that was weird.
People trying to inflate this transfer to ludicrous numbers because they're like, no, it can't be that. It can't be because they're physically unable to process the fact that a release clause can be a release clause. And so when people are trying to bump every transfer up, I can completely understand why City fans get annoyed by it, because no one puts wages into any other transfer. It's like a free transfer, right? No free transfer is a free transfer, because you have to pay a massive signing on bonus because the player basically gets, because this is the denouement, if you will, the great denouement of the Bosman ruling. This is where we've got to, in that players will now wind down their contracts and say, why would they pay a club for me when they could just play me directly? And I completely understand that's player power at its kind of highest peak. And it only exists for the very top echelon of players, sure. But, you know, that's where we're at. I just don't see anyone else throwing any of these things into other deals, and therefore I think it's
a little bit unfair to try and whack in loads of stuff on Erling Haaland's just because it was a release clause fee.
Yeah, there's actually Sam Lee, who covers Man City for The Athletic. He's really good at it too. He did a really good breakdown when Haaland joined City. And as part of it, he outlined, you know, how much it cost and why they did it, basically. And basically, going back to Christmas, he said that Real Madrid were in pole position to sign Haaland, and Man City were like, we cannot let this happen. They had this like super big meeting about like, what is it actually going to cost us to get this guy? And once they'd put in release clause and commissions and wages and bonuses, every single penny they put into it, and they were like, okay, this costs £190 million. This is how much it's costing to get this player. And then from there, they've just put everything into it and gone for it. And he points out
on a five-year contract, you amortize that to what, $40 million a year?
Well, he says, like, even with the release clause to Dortmund, that doesn't get paid in full straight away. And they will spread this cost out over the length of his contract. So, like, it's, you know, it doesn't really matter to them. Like, they know what they've got to put out there to get this player. They know what the player is going to bring to them. And he actually says in the deal, for City, this deal actually came out cheaper than they expected. So, like, it's not really one for us to be worried about. If Man City feel like this is a decent deal, then fair play.
No, I agree. But what Jack sort of brings up is a completely separate point for me. Obviously, putting wages into a total transfer cost is bizarre behavior and no one should do it. But if your agency fees almost double the transfer cost in total,
I think the agency fees were closer to £30 million.
Right. So, I mean, but like, it's fine, but people keep going, oh my God, what a bargain, 51 million. It's like, all right, it's at least 80. And in these circumstances, I think this is a specific circumstance where the fees were so high, you actually have to talk about it. And maybe the two issues have become conflated and City fans start to get annoyed about bringing up the agency fees because one news channel decided to put the wage cost into it all as well and make it completely ridiculous. But hey ho, yeah. Anyway.
If he hadn't had a release clause, right?
Yeah, he would
and
have.
And he had 2 years left on his contract. What do you reckon he'd have cost?
Yeah, 80, 90 million.
something so like, it comes but, out in the wash.
But,
like,
well, but he still would. You still would pay the the agency fees on top of that, I guess. But
yes,
anywho, let's talk about him as a player. Dean, you're infatuated with this player. You've even done a TikTok to say that he needs to be your captain in fantasy football. Goal machine, obviously. Physical specimen. Fast, strong, hammer of a left foot. Good in the air. He's got this air about him that everyone, they just fear him. And that changes the feel of a team. I mean, it's been obvious for quite a few years that he's a special player. He's going to be a really special striker. He once scored 9 goals in the same game in an under-20 World Cup game for Norway. Then he got a goal a game at RB Salzburg. Then he got a goal a game at Borussia Dortmund. And he switched through the gears and switched through his clubs really, really quickly. It's amazing, actually, that this player is attracting so many question marks. There are a lot of people who are asking whether or not Erling Haaland can genuinely succeed in the Premier League and succeed for Manchester City. I guess part of that is Bundesliga tax. Part of that is style of play and how he meshes or doesn't with Pep Guardiola and whether or not his injury record is a massive concern. Dean, I'd like to throw to you to take care of these complaints.
Yeah, look, he has missed a lot of games and, you know, you could argue that like the type of injuries they were could be a concern for someone that's 21, but ultimately Man City are not concerned about it. In conversations between Haaland and Man City, they obviously tried to figure out like how this is all going to work. And ultimately, I think that the point you have to raise is, well, Man City went all out to get Harry Kane a year ago, and he's a very, very different centre forward to Erling Haaland. Ultimately, with Haaland, you are not getting the same link-up play. You're not getting same play outside of the box. But what you are getting is absolute ruthlessness inside the box. And this type of movement and awareness that he's got, he's almost unmatched in world football. So that basic trait is something that Pep Guardiola can take in its raw being, if you like, and be like, okay, for the first season, this is fine because I will make sure that our guys you have to fit into the Man City system first and foremost. Like, City aren't going to suddenly transform just to suit Haaland. Like, he's going to have to go into that central role and adapt to the way that Man City play. But ultimately, what that means is finishing off cutbacks, making sure that he has a good understanding with Grealish or Sterling or Jesus, whoever it ends up being in those positions around him, Foden. Ultimately score goals. And on the back of that, they're going to change the way that he plays. Now, in that first season, I've talked about the fact that, you know, I do expect Haaland to score a lot of goals. A lot of that is to do with the fact he's on penalties. I don't think we're looking at a player here that in his first season in the Premier League is going to score like 35 goals. I don't think we're going to get that, because I do think there's going to be an adaptability issue here for Haaland, and that there are times when I think he might even go through mini goal droughts, certainly by his standards. But it's all about growing with this team. And we've seen before, Pep Guardiola is perfectly happy to allow people a year to do that. I'm told that still applies to Erling Haaland. Just because we are all have this unbelievable expectation from him doesn't mean that Man City are now all about Erling Haaland. He's just part of the next phase that takes them to a different level over the next 4 years.
Yeah, I think this is fair, right? I'm completely with you in that I think he probably is over 15, under 25 first year.
I think if he hits 20 goals next season, I think that's a massive win.
That's a huge win, and one of those that you go, yeah, that's a good start. Really good start. I don't think that Erling Haaland's going to be walking in breaking the Premier League goals record in his first season. Now, if he does, fair play to him. But I just can't see it at this point, because I think that there's an element here where Pep also likes to get players in at the rate that he wants to get them in. Now, that doesn't mean I don't think he's going to be starting in the first game of next season. Of course he will. But I do think there will be an element where people are like, oh, he's not playing this week. That's a bit random. And I think especially the fact that Julian Alvarez is in there as well, and Pep seems to want to ingratiate him into the squad straight away, suggests to me that I think there will be a little bit more rotation than people think next season, especially if City are fighting on four fronts again, which they undoubtedly will be.
Yeah, well, maybe a little bit of rotation might be good for Erling Haaland and the injury record. It might allow him to settle down a bit. I mean, people have been picking away at Jack Grealish's spotty first season at Manchester City. And look, he hasn't really made the impact that he possibly should have done. But ultimately, that bloke needed a rest. Villa ran him into the ground for 4 years. He played every game available, played half of it on shin splints. Honestly, a season in and out of the team has probably extended his career by 3 years. And Erling Haaland might just need to calm down a bit. You know, Dortmund have heavily, heavily relied on him over the course of the last season. And he's probably been pushed to the physical limit. This gives him a little bit of breathing space. Yeah. Look, his injuries do go before Marco Rosa. So we can't just pie it off as Marco Rosa can't manage a squad fitness-wise. It is a lasting problem, but it's just one of those things. On the attacking fit, it's really important not to assume that good players just figure it out, because recent history, Lukaku and Tuchel, will tell us that that doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. Also, the list of skeletons that Diego Simeone has left, very talented attacking players that he's ruined over the years. We can't ignore these lessons. But on the other hand, Sergio Aguero transformed as a footballer over the course of the first year under Pep Guardiola. You know, and even in that first year when he wasn't quite the forward Pep wanted, he still scored tons of goals. So not really concerned here either. Also, City cross it more than people think. And he's good ahead and crosses in. So that's okay. Also, by the way, Haaland's short game, it's not bad. Like, it's not great, but it's not bad. And his expected assist numbers and chance creation are also really high. They use them for bounce passes and touchbacks and layoffs. It's actually like quite clued up in that area of the game. So this really isn't that much of a problem. And I give it a straight A. He's an unbelievable footballer. Sometimes football is really simple and obvious, but football clubs really overthink things. Man City haven't overthought anything here. They've just gone and bought an amazing striker.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Is that everything points to this being a success, right? At this point. Now, there are obviously things that don't always work, but I'm not hugely worried about them. Things can always go wrong, but at this point, I feel like this is going to be a success, and that's all you can judge it on until we've seen actual evidence to the contrary, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Number two is Darwin Nunez. Benfica have said that this is a 75 million euro deal rising to 100 million if bonuses are met. Benfica.
Yeah, but what are the agent fees?
Liverpool. Don't know. Probably could be in the billions, mate. Could be in the billions.
More than they were going to Brighton.
And add the wages in, Sam.
No. Oh, okay. Hang on. Let me just do the quick calculation. Look, this is very expensive. Even without all of that, this is a very expensive deal. And this is not Liverpool's MO whatsoever, because they only usually pay these prices for a player who is clearly the finished product, one of the best in their position. We're talking about Virgil van Dijk. We're talking about Alisson. This Darwin Nunez is not the finished product whatsoever. So they are looking at what I think is probably a very lean young striker market. And it's friend of the pod, Aaron Moniz, who tweeted this out and got me thinking, actually, this market, the Liverpool know that they need to go in and buy a forward because they've got question marks over Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane looks like he's leaving. They probably need to go towards the younger side because they're going to need a player who can be a building block for the next couple of years. And with Erling Haaland gone to Manchester City and Dusan Vlahovic in January going to Juventus, there actually isn't that much left outside of Darwin, outside of Alexander Isak, who doesn't really fit Klopp at all, and someone like Scamacca, who is even further down the line of developmental stuff than Darwin. So I'm not saying that Liverpool have sort of cornered themselves here, but they have taken a bit of a leap, which is not quite like them. They don't typically do this. I suppose it helps that Darwin has just scored 30 plus goals, played in the Champions League, played against Liverpool, scored against Liverpool. Virgil van Dijk said he was a nightmare to play against. And like, he is a nightmare to play against. Like, Darwin's a beast. He is, again, a physical specimen, strong, fast, direct, incredible frame, aggression. There's a bloodthirst to Darwin Nunez's game that I absolutely love. The fact that he can play through the middle or off the left is a huge bonus for Klopp as he mixes the look of his front three. He split about 3,000 minutes right down the middle there, 1,500 on the left, 1,500 in the middle last season, depending on who the manager was at Benfica. He's a vicious ball striker. He's deadly in the box. But there are things for him to work on and concerns. His link-up play isn't good enough and needs to be worked on. And I hope that Jurgen Klopp can get to work on that pretty quickly. This is not necessarily a good measure, but just checking his pass completion. And I know that obviously he's passing in the final third, they're higher risk, they're pressured, all that. His pass completion is in the first percentile of Europe, as in the worst. And we often talk, whenever I mention percentiles, I usually talk about 99th, 97th, 85th. Darwin's pass completion is as bad as it gets across Europe. And you can see that in his close play, in his link-up play, it's a bit scruffy. I think it's got better this year, but it's not quite up to standard just yet. He also has a slight balance issue. Unlike Karim Adeyemi, Darwin Nunez cannot quite control himself when he's at full speed. And I presume it's due to the fact that he weighs loads more and is much taller. But again, there's something that can be done there. When he starts to kick into final gear, he's kind of a bit liable to fall over or slip or something like that. These are small concerns, I guess, because really he's been bought to score goals and he's going to score probably loads of them, if last season is anything to go by. But here's the final thing to mention. He outperformed his XG last year to a crazy, crazy degree. And the previous two seasons before that, he underperformed it by about 2 goals. So what's normal? Is he just taking off? Is this an anomaly? That's what Liverpool have got to figure out. They've obviously gone with, no, this is cool. We're good with Darwin. He's exploding. He's breaking out. And we're going to harness that. But the XG data would suggest that maybe what he did last season, even in Portugal, was unsustainable. And then moving up another level to the Premier League, of course, you expect a goal reduction.
I'm hotter on this than I think you are. And I think it's a really, really good move. Now, I've spent this week on holiday reading, and one of the books I read was Uli Hesse's brilliant Building the Yellow Wall. It's about the kind of development of Borussia Dortmund over, and there's a good sort of 3-4 chapters dedicated to Jurgen Klopp's Borussia Dortmund team. And one of the things that he speaks about in the book is the fact that this team were beating teams around them who were better sides, who were more obviously world-class players because they were young, hungry, determined, driven, you know, and basically physical monsters in the third, in the final third. And that's what they've added in Darwin. They've added a player who, you know, sometimes we talk about on the pod, and, you know, we've mentioned this about someone like Bernardo Silva before, right? That Bernardo Silva could walk into any team in the world because not only is he technically absolutely unbelievable, but, you know, mostly because his work rate, his tenacity is so high that there is not a single manager who wouldn't want to add him to the squad that they have. Now, obviously, Darwin's technicalities are nowhere near that level, as you've just pointed out. But I do think there's an element, especially in the Premier League, where if you are a world-class technician and you don't have the right pieces around you, things cannot go for you. And I think we've seen something like this at Manchester United for a long time, right? Where it might not go for you, despite you might be absolutely unbelievable because the pieces aren't built around you to make that work.
Jack, do you know who immediately sprung to mind there? Borja Valero at West Brom.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Danny Parejo at QPR. Yeah. Look, things cannot work for you if those things aren't right. But if you are tenacious, you are driven, and you are putting in that work rate every single time, the chances are that even if things aren't falling for you, you will be given the benefit of the doubt a little bit more often than not because you make things happen by pure force of will. And I think Darwin is one of those players who will make things happen through sheer force of will, even if it isn't going for him technically. Now, I think he's going to improve leaps and bounds under Klopp in the way that Klopp had that young Dortmund team and they improved them to levels that no one could have, you know, imagined that he brought them to. I think Klopp is going to do something similar with Darwin. But even until that point, I think the fact that he is so tenacious, that he is so driven, that he is such a physical monster in terms of pace, in terms of speed, in terms of power, in terms of drive, that he is able to get into these areas and really make it work. And he will just get through teams by scaring them to death. And that, for me, is something that pushes this up a notch because I think the floor on it, the ceiling isn't as high, I think, as someone else, you know, like Haaland. But I think the floor on it is really quite high as well because just because of the way that he plays and the way that he is.
I think, yeah. Oh, sorry, go on, Dean.
I was going to say, like, I've got two questions really on this for Sam. Like, so Luis Diaz obviously came from Porto and made unbelievable impact. And it was actually one of the reasons that Liverpool don't have that many concerns about the transition that Nunes is going to make from Primera to the Premier League, because Diaz done it so seamlessly with Cimbruno Fernandez do it before. Luis Diaz cost about 37 million, I think. So you're looking at about double. Let's just say it's double the amount they're paying here. Is that fair? Are they getting good value for money in that sense?
Well, I mean, it's a tough question to answer because I think Luis Diaz was the best player in Portugal up until the moment he left Portugal. He was a better player than Darwin Nunez, but strikers cost more money. Mm-hmm. They just do. It's just a fact. So you have to factor that in. I'd say still that this transfer fee has ended up more expensive than I imagined it to be. I didn't, like, even if the release clause is set around this area, I didn't actually expect the release clause to be met because there are those question marks. But as Jack basically alludes to, he does have a drive and a persistence that will probably make him succeed. And he's the exact kind of player who'll sweat through his shirt and at the end get given a big Klopp bear hug and a grin, and he'll pat him on the head and he'll say, "Well done, Darwin, you didn't score today, but you did this and you did that and you were a massive part of the team. And I think Darwin will enjoy that. And I think he'll become part of this team. And any player going to Jurgen Klopp, like, I'm willing to say, will get coached up on their negatives and become a better player. So
yeah,
it's just a lot of money.
You're saying is you're really excited about the evolution of Darwin.
Oh mate, I specifically avoided that.
We'll do a TikTok on that.
I'm giving it a B because this is risky. This is high stakes because of the amount of money they've ended up paying, but he's a good player. He's got great traits that suit the Premier League, and he's going to Jurgen Klopp.
I would have gone B.
It is. Look, I think they might have overpaid, but then you flip it. His wages are 140 grand a week. That's nothing, to be honest.
Yeah, like, we don't include them in transfer fees.
Haaland's earning 400 grand a week at Man City.
Yeah.
And Nunez has agreed to 140 grand a week at Liverpool. So that's a good deal. Origi's left. Sadio Mane's leaving. Minamino's leaving, probably. That's three players from the forward line going. So you're bringing in this guy to replace them. Firmino, probably staying now. Jota, where does he fall down the pecking order? Are we looking at Liverpool's first choice front line while Salah's still there? Is it going to be Salah, Diaz, Nunez? Is that Liverpool's go-to front line from the start?
I think so,
season?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
I think it has to be. And I said this to Sam.
I'm just wondering, like, is that it now? He'll rotate. Man City, whatever it is, July 31st. Is that the lineup everyone now wants to see from game one?
We've also talked about the fact that there is the real possibility of Jurgen Klopp looking at changing his formation. And Sam spoke about it before, that Dortmund side played a 4-2-3-1 or a variation on
it. Yeah, I don't think he'll do it yet, though, will he? Like, maybe in a year. Yet. I don't think he's going to do it from
I think we start to see it built in this season. Mm. I don't think he starts the first game of the Premier League season by doing that. No chance. I don't think that's the Community Shield lineup. But I do wonder if by Christmas we're seeing the 4-2-3-1 as a relatively common rotation within Jurgen Klopp's plans. And that, I think, changes things a little bit because it means you can start all four of them with Jota in the mix as well. You can start to move players around and see how that works. So that'd be interesting too.
I agree.
Anyway, he's not even number one. Who's number one?
Well, number one, by virtue of being the most expensive transfer so far, is Aurelien Tchouaméni, who I believe his 100 million euros is more guaranteed or more upfront than Darwin's. So he is the most expensive one. It's a lot. I said it with Darwin, and I maintain that it's a lot for Aurelien Tchouaméni. Strikers cost a lot of money, fine. Apparently, so do number sixes nowadays. I think people have been listening to the Ranks SC podcast. People in power, people that make decisions in football, and they have come to the same conclusion that we have, is that, do it all complete midfielders that play as the number six, as the linchpin, are very, very hard to come by. There are very few of them that can cut it at the top level. And if you want one, you are going to have to pay. Also, what doesn't help Real Madrid in this scenario at all is that they had this Kylian Mbappe pot saved on their Monzo app, and they weren't allowed to use it because Kylian Mbappe decided to stick around in Paris. And when people know that you've got an Mbappe pot, I'm sorry, but every transfer you make from that point on is going to be a touch more pricey than you had imagined. However, Jack, Dean, can you think of a midfielder other than Declan Rice, before you mention him, Dean, that is a safer investment if you were to look for the central midfield solution long term and as that complete number six? Is there a better way use of this money than Aurelien Tchouaméni? Because I can't think of one.
No. Especially for Madrid. Like, Declan Rice isn't even a safe bet in Spanish football. So, like, that's not even really what they'd have considered. No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, they, in terms of other midfielders, they were looking at like Pogba and stuff, but you're still not getting the same sort of midfielder there. So, like, for what they needed and for like how this team is going to grow, they know that the reason they've paid up is because this guy would have gone to one of their European rivals. There's absolutely no doubt about it, and they couldn't really afford that for that to happen. Not only do they need to keep their noses in front of Barca as they try to rebuild, but we're talking about the European champions here, and they've become European champions at a time that's kind of unexpected. Like, they didn't have the best team in Europe by any means. We know that. But imagine when they do have the best team in Europe, what they'll be capable of. So, like, that's what their vision has to be.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it is a lot. But then if they didn't pull the trigger on this, he might go to Chelsea. And he might go to Chelsea for 60 or 70 rather than 100 because they aren't preying on the Mbappe failure. So that's just kind of how this business works. So it is a lot of money, but I try not to hold it against them too much in context. Anyway, Tchouaméni, for those that haven't seen him, he intercepts the ball more than anyone in Europe, literally. He tackles more than anyone in Europe most of the time. And his ball progression, be it passing or dribbling and carrying, is really, really good. He has the physical skill set to play as the lone number six or in a pair or in a 4-4-2 and hold the middle. He has the technical skill to thrive in La Liga. He has the ideal frame and size. I think he's roughly 6'1", 6'2", strong, built well. Guys, is this really just one thing he can't do? And that's shoot from distance.
Although you got some heat on this.
I got some heat by one idiot who saw him score two nice goals in a game and go, "What do you mean he can't shoot? Look at these two." He's like,
let's
nice.
Be nice.
Let's not be nice. That guy was stupid. I I got his shot map up. I looked at all of his shots. I watched them all. I watched 95% of them sail 15 yards wide of the goal, just all from 25 yards. And I'm sorry, Aurelien, but you don't have to take any advice from me, but maybe don't shoot quite as often from 25 yards. You are not that good at it. Although I appreciate it. It's good fun to try. that's it. That's it. That's the one fault. And am I holding that against him really as a number six? Not really. I just wish he'd shoot a little bit less.
I can't wait for him to score 8 goals from outside the box.
Yeah, it's going
to
be like,
well, the thing is, I could be in trouble there because remember this season, early doors, Eduardo Camavinga started pinging them in, didn't he? From 25 yards. There's something in that Real Madrid
water.
That's the
thing. They probably do it in training all the time and they probably just fly into the top bag and it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to try one. And it goes flying off target. And they're the ones we actually see.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
No, you're right. You are right, Sam. I'm only messing. But it was one of those where, it's one of those things that can just go against you, can't it? Like, oh, suddenly he scored 4 goals from 30 yards in his first 6 games. You're like, damn. Wish I hadn't said that so loudly.
Yeah, we'll judge him over a season. Let's judge him over a season, not over 4 games if it happens.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, so I feel a little bit torn here between a B plus and an A because it's a lot of money.
An A minus.
A minus. Perfect. Yeah. Because it is like, I feel like A's should be reserved for like particularly clever deals or like someone who's really pulled someone's pants down. But no, that hasn't really happened here. And it's not like a clever deal and it is a lot of money, but it's a lot of money for a reason. And I guess I just can't really fault it. So yeah, I'll go with A minus.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. It's the minus purely coming from the slight bit of risk attached to it because it's a really young player for loads of money. Yeah. And famously, and there's been a fair bit of written content around this over the last couple of weeks, is that big money transfers often don't go well. Like, if you look at the top 20, there's maybe like 3 genuine, hardcore, absolute stone dead successes. There's 5-6 up in the air. And then there's some really big, quite uncomfortable failures. And so therefore, there's always that element of risk attached to this kind of money on a transfer. But if you're going to do it, buying one of the best young midfielders in the entire world who has all the ability to grow and basically set up Real Madrid with Camavinga and Tchouaméni and Valverde for a midfield 3 that could go on and conquer in the way that this one has for them at this time. So there's not much to knock on it, is there, really? It's just one of those.
Not really. Yeah. You just can't give it an A plus or an A because it is just like every football transfer is a risk and it is loads of money. I'd give it an A if it was 20 million, obviously. A plus, but it's not.
It's a couple of stars on the end of it.
Yeah.
But ultimately not that. Right. Well, thank you very much, Sam. That was
very good.
Fun.
What
were the 5? Let's just recap the 5 grades quickly.
Okay, we started with Brendan Aaronson, who I'm clearly very worried about, more worried than I realised, C plus. Karim Adeyemi to Dortmund, we get a bit brighter, A minus. Erling Haaland gets an A, Darwin gets a B, and Tchouaméni gets an A minus.
Okay, very good, very good. Right, after the break, we're going to be having Men of the Week and the Gibberish Rankings. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for everybody's favourite part of the week. Dean Jones, I'm glad to hand this back to you. I enjoyed you teeing yourself up last week, but I feel like it's nicer with a tee up.
Yeah, definitely. It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Didier Deschamps. Mm. Oh, France are a bit of a mess, lads. We're heading into a World Cup when they've just been dumped out of the Nations League after 4 bad results this month. And while, of course, you can excuse some of the players on the back of a long season, I'm not sure you can excuse Deschamps for not being able to get together a team that could get some results out of those 4 matches. He's got an incredible pool to call on, and he didn't do it wisely enough. They should not fail to win these 4 games. They lost 2-1 to Denmark. They drew with Croatia and Austria 1-1. And they lost 1-0 at home to Croatia. They are out of the Nations League. And look, take this back to the Euros. They were beaten by the Swiss. You have to wonder whether this unbelievable crop of players are actually going to be able to deliver in Qatar on the back of what they've been doing recently. Look, they won the last World Cup. They won the last Nations League. They should be favourites to go on and win the World Cup. Don't think they can be. Not based on what we've been seeing. They've been a mess. They've been sliced open. Like, I watched 2 of those games in almost full, and watch highlights of the other two. And look, they seem to have control of a game, and then they, I don't know if they switch off, if they're just too easy to carve apart, but something happens to this France team, and it's worrying. And Deschamps has to come up with some answers between now and the World Cup, and he's only got two games to play before they get to Qatar. It's all looking a bit melonish for Didier Deschamps.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been quite uncomfortable watching France. It just looks like, you know, I love Antoine Griezmann more than most people, I would
say.
Yeah,
I mean, he could have been the melon, to be fair, but yeah.
I have no idea what's happened to Grizzy. It just looks like he's suddenly forgotten how to play football. Like, Benzema and Griezmann couldn't complete a pass to each other. It's like nothing I've really ever seen. But yeah, one of those.
You know, I've had doubts about Griezmann my whole life.
Oh yeah.
I Am Legend, was it? Is that what it was called?
Your whole life?
Your whole life.
Since I was born. My mum said, any worries? I said, Griezmann's form, mum.
An image to be made at some point. Dean being born with a speech bubble. Worried about Griezmann's form, mummy. Okay, all right. Bet you missed that.
Oh yeah, I tried it last week. Did you hear that?
I did hear it. It was, I would call it a painfully pathetic attempt.
A meow.
It was awful. Yeah, it was a cat purring.
It was the lack. It was the lack of commitment, really, that hurt me, I think. You sound like a phone ringing. Right, who's on gibberish?
Yeah, it's me, and I'm going to talk about my local pub this week. It is very interesting, very strange place with some very interesting clientele. And I'm actually going to rank the three most interesting / weird people who regularly come in and have a drink. At number three, it's actually one of the barmaids. To protect her identity, we'll call her B. And the first time I ever went to this pub, there was a group of motorcyclists outside. You know, like proper, like, were they Harley Davidson?
Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, it was proper that sort of stuff. It was a group of like about 10 of them all out there with their incredible looking
Hell's Angels types.
Yeah, and what they were doing was they were incrementally starting and then turning off their motorbikes and showing them to each other. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I saw the barmaid do was run outside and inhale the fumes off the exhaust of one of the motorbikes and then run back in and go, oh, I love it. I love it. Like that. And that set the tone for an interesting, well, it's been a year and a half or so of being served drinks by this slightly crazy woman who every time a motorbike starts up, runs outside and inhales the fumes. I don't think that's good for you, but...
It's definitely not.
No, it's not.
It's a cheap way of vaping.
Very cheap. Very dangerous as well.
I think vapes are better for you than that.
Yeah, just about.
If the choice is vaping or inhaling motorbike fumes, I would suggest every child picks up a vape.
Yes. Pick up a vape today. Use the code RANKS20. No. Okay, right. Number two. The man who brings his cat in on the leash.
One of my friends does this. She walks her cat with a leash, so I'm not even going to knock this too much.
He brings the cat into the pub. It sits on a bar stool, and he just like has a quick pint or two, reads the newspaper. The cat just sits there, perfectly behaved, and then they just leave. I've seen him two or three times. I'm sort of jealous. Like, my cat would never do that. He would go mental. But this guy is more than happy to bring a cat on a leash into a quite a rough looking pub in Southeast London and just have it sit there for a while he has a couple of pints.
Oh, wow. Are these two things ever happened at the same time? Like, she's outside taking in exhaust fumes and a bloke's walking past with a cat on a leash. Is that ever?
I've never seen this happen simultaneously, no. Never at all. And at number one, this is not one person, it's a group. This pub is home to an over 65 women's darts league.
Quality. I love that.
Every Monday, a bunch of women, and I'm talking like 20 of them, right? About 20 or so, over 65 women walk into the pub. They've got homemade food. They've often, at one different points, they've had birthday cakes for each other because they're celebrating birthdays. And they have basically a darts tournament. And they're actually not that bad, you know. They're definitely better than me, although, Jack, you've played with
They've been playing for 50 years. They should be good. If they've been playing since they were kids, they'd be great.
True. Not that bad. And one of them's really sharp on the mental arithmetic as well, doing the maths. Really, really good. Mm. But the funny thing is that dartboard is actually obstructed in this pub by a series of really heavy sets of like chairs and stools. And every time they walk in, I have to move all the furniture out of the way so they can play. Because I'm always there after football and I'm always there to move the furniture. So they can't actually play unless somebody moves the furniture for them, because the dartboard is completely obstructed by stuff.
They do just stand there until somebody does it.
I just think the pub should probably cater for them and just move the chairs, but they always end up moving back. But not half bad, these ladies. I'm really impressed.
Nice. That's fantastic. So you basically turned into a furniture removal man post-football.
Yeah.
It's all good for the arms, Sam.
In the off-season.
In the off-season, yeah.
No football to watch.
Anyway, the real number one weirdest bloke that is in this pub is this bloke that walks in and keeps ranking stuff. 3-1, 3-1, 5-1. He just won't stop. I hate him.
I'm really sad that you got to that before I did. Yeah. oh dear. Very, very good. Well done. It does sound like your pub is full of characters, Sam, and that's really what I'm after in a pub. So that's I think it's a good thing. I think it's a positive.
I think so, yeah. Bit of a clown car, but it's my clown car.
Yeah, you know, that's what it's about. Pubs should always have some people who are interesting characters in them. It's what gives them life. Mm. So I would agree. Very, very good. Right. And on that bombshell, I think we are going to call this one a day. All that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Sam Tai. Wonderful main ranking, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much to Dean Jones. Is this the last episode we've got with you?
It is, mate, yeah. It's my last ever episode of Ranked FC. So it's been really good. I'm away for, I don't know even how long I'm going on holiday for. 3 weeks, I think. So I don't know if that's three episodes or not.
You just bring the microphone
might well
with you.
I am going to take my mic with me, so I'll see how things pan out. At the very least, I might do some Patreon stuff. We're going to keep updates coming over there, so I presume you two planned to keep the spotlights going over the summer anyway. Thanks to everyone who's joined us over on Patreon. Come and join us if you fancy it.
Two extra episodes a week, a post box on a Monday where we answer all of your questions, and a spotlight on a Friday where at the moment we're just talking about some of the transfers we really like. So it's been quite a lot of fun. There's obviously also the
Maybe
Women's
I'll stick
Euros
some holiday photos on there as well as a little bonus.
Yeah. There's lots of
me
of
in California on the beach. Yeah, why not?
Well, while we're at admin, also you give us a follow on TikTok if that's your platform. We've been making little videos over there regarding transfers. It's been a lot of fun. We're enjoying ourselves on a new platform. And of course, on Instagram or on Twitter, just search for Ranks FC.
And if you want to send any money, my PayPal is...
Right, before we get too chaotic, let's call this. Thank you very much for listening. As ever, it's so good to be back. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today. For generations to come, because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Treat dad to the good stuff at Nordstrom Rack and save big. Father's Day is Sunday, June 16th, and Nordstrom Rack's got gifts dad will love, up to 60% off. Shirts, activewear, watches, cologne, denim, and more. Find amazing deals on Tommy Bahama, Cole Haan, Original Penguin, and Vince. Great brands, great prices. So get to your Nordstrom Rack store now and make dad's day with gifts up to 60% off.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
"No!"
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.